Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today, I'm sitting down and having a chat with Aaron McNeil from the Free Radicals Paramedic Podcast. And today we are answering one of the most frequently asked questions that we get, and that is regarding study tips. How to study, what's the best way to do it? So Aaron is kindly offered to take time out of his day to have a chat about all of the different steps to achieving really good study habits and techniques. So Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Look, I'm going to just preface this with the fact that I'm not a study expert in any way, shape or form. However, I think when you get into a lifelong industry like health where and paramedics or nursing, whichever you're coming from, you have to develop these skills to their nth degree so you can maximize your own learning to take that transition from academia to practice, because that's what we're here for, right? You need to grasp what you know now, so then when you start the job, you know, you can hit the ground running.
And with uni as well, a lot of people are either coming out from school, so they're going into an environment where it's very self-directed learning, and then we've also got mature age students who may have taken 10, 20 years out of being from school, having to come back and have to study again. So I guess that's why it's our most frequently asked question, but you're right, it is a lifelong profession and of learning. So how do we start, you know, breaking this down? What is the best or the first step to building a good study or learning about study?
I think a lot of people try to look, when they look online, they like to do these surveys about sort of what sort of learner they are, and they're trying to fit their personality or, you know, or how they think they interact with information. The problem with that is that there's many learning styles, and especially when it comes to medicine, that there might be things that grab you visually. There might be things that grab you from an auditory perspective. And then sometimes it's just, you have to get down and dirty, just read the content as well. So I think what you need to find out is where you get the most bang for buck for your time. So, you know, if you're sitting there for 2 hours and you still haven't figured out how ECG access works, maybe what you're doing isn't actually working. Okay. So maybe you need to draw it out. Maybe you need to get up and talk about it out loud. Maybe you need to watch a few lectures. So it's about sort of putting it all together and making those things happen for you all the time. So, you know, if you get information by listening to lectures and maybe you want to verbally record yourself making some stuff and then put that into a gym playlist, you know, so you can hear it whilst it's there, you know, that subconscious or getting that information to, you know, have that repetition for you, you know. Maybe you need to draw out those schematics like mind maps, you know, like we were talking about before, like if it's a content heavy thing, putting something down like diabetes and then going, okay, cool. So we've got islets, Langerhans, you know, that becomes destructed by autoimmune cells and all that kind of stuff. Maybe you need to make cartoons. Maybe you need to have fun with it, you know. So the purpose of all of those things, or, you know, even with skills, just sitting there and like thinking about it and then using your hands and how your hands would be manipulated, say, with a laryngoscope and going, okay, so I'm looking down. What do I see anteriorly in the oropharynx and so forth. So it's just about really grappling with what you do have and then you know, being creative with that as well. So then you can maximize your learning, because that's how you make new neural pathways, and that's how you're going to sort of like adhere a lot of this stuff in.
That makes a lot of sense. So most people too would be a combination of those things, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think people just like to direct themselves and go, oh, well, I'm more visual. And you're like, yeah, you probably are, but you probably could use some other stuff as well. And, it, you know, if when things are hard, you know, if like you know, that's when like the real learning is happening. Like those, the brain juices are real are getting mixed around because, you know, you're struggling to like form those connections. That's actually a really good thing. So don't just limit yourself to one type, you know, like if you've got your thing, sure, do that. But, you know, experiment, you know.
Absolutely.
Try to use the information as much as possible.
Definitely. Makes a lot of sense. Especially, yeah, when you first start, I reckon you're right. Try all the different things and see which ones stick best for you. So going on from then, you now know what type of learner you are. You've tried all these different things or you're in the process of doing that. How do you then translate that to when you're creating your notes and your actual doing your actual study?
Yeah, so we have to remember that creating notes and study are two different things, okay? So the notes that you create are what you use for study, and then when you start to go and reuse that information, synthesize it, and then put it into practical terms for an examination or, you know, clinical practice, that's your real study. So creating notes is extremely important. So what I guess what I'm going to advocate for here is making sure that you turn up to your lectures and you eliminate every distraction possible. So you turn off your phone, you turn off notifications, and you engage with what the lecturer is actually saying to you. So you're not sitting there just trying to type out every single word that they're saying. You're trying to take in the concept of what that actual lecturer is about and get that high yield information that can actually help you progress. Okay. So avoid just sitting there and just going, okay, so they said, what was that last sentence? They said something about going to tea and then we're going to have a break then. And you've just missed the actual concept of the lecture. Okay, so what I would suggest that you do is not sit there and just highlight every single word on the page or on your lecture printout, whatever you're going to take in there. But understand that, you know, when you're, if you're talking about, say, you know, cardiology, and we're going, okay, cool. So we've got, we're talking about how the heart works and how blood gets fed in. So our preload and afterload, and what affects that. So maybe you have a heading saying, you know, preload X, Y, and Z, afterload affects this way. Okay. And you've got all the information and you've written down a few words. So try to surmise and synthesize everything you have that lecturer is giving to you, whether that's in the chute or just the lecture. Now, there's a range of methods that you can actually employ with this. Like there's the outline method where you, like I said before, you've got the topic and you've got the information that correlates to that underneath it. And then you've got another heading topic again, and so things, you know, are streamlined, and that's really good because when you go to look at your study notes, you've always got this concise set of notes already that you can just start to study, and then you can summarize those and move on. Okay, so what we're trying to do here is make sure that you don't do a few misnomers, right? You never want to rewatch lectures or re-listen to recordings because you're just wasting your time. Okay, you want to start using the information as soon as you get it. And you never just want to look at slides because there might be context that you're missing. And rather than just looking for an answer that you're hoping to remember in a multiple choice examination, right? So the really important thing though is to actually consider is this a content heavy subject or a fact heavy subject. So facts are just things you just have to remember, you know, you just have to memorize them. They usually are sort of like vast things, but they're not complicated. Most of the time it probably could be intuitive as well, right? But content heavy is this when those materials you know, requires like a high level of application, but also they're extremely dense in the information they have. Like cardiac vectors, right? No one likes cardiac vectors.
No, it's hard to get your head around.
Yeah, so you've got to sort of, you're trying to use something from a electrophysiology point of view that also feeds into physiology and pathology, right? And that can be quite difficult rather than just, hey, when the heart has so many nodes that causes it to pump, and you're like, okay, cool. So that's how the stream goes fine. So do what you can, you know, whether in the lecture that you make tables, you make mind maps, you do drawings at the same time, but just make sure it's the high yield stuff. And you can probably get that from your learning objectives. You can probably put that together and go, okay, cool, this is what they're looking for and this is what I need to know.
Absolutely. And those fact heavy ones could be, for example, like, I don't know, making flashcards for your DTPs, so your indications, contras, all the stuff that you just have to know. And then, yeah, you're more concept heavy. You might really need to make big maps and really draw it out, just depending on the way that you learnt back in step one. So depending on how you learn, you can tailor it to however you need. But going on to that now, you've created those notes and now you're going into that phase of, okay, I need to remember them. How do we hold on to that information that you've just learnt, basically?
Yeah, don't just write it down and then shelve it and then think you're going to remember it during exam time or when your prospector asks you a question whilst you're on placement. It's not going to happen. So just remember, nothing is actually ever easy. You know, if you have to understand that concept that we're talking about before and it's hard, that's actually a good thing. So sometimes you just need to get into like the rubble with it and just get down and dirty with the concept or your information and just keep hammering at it in some way or form. But what we do know is that if when you first learn something, you have like this exponential growth in your in what you've memorized, at least, maybe not what you've understood. And that goes to say, you know, let's call it 50% or something like that. But as time goes on, that memory starts to depreciate and you start to lose the information. So what we need to do is set a calendar or some time where we go, okay, within like a week or two, I'm going to review what I know now and build on it. And then 2 weeks after that or 3 weeks, I'm going to then review and build on what I know after that. Now, that's not just rereading it though. Studies have actually shown that if you get a question or just say like a topic heading and you start to write out everything that you remember, that you're actually, one, you're using active recall, which we'll get to in just a moment, but because you're challenging yourself to push that out, then you're actually going to remember more, probably up to twice as more than you would if you just reread the thing. Okay, so it's about spacing or space repetition, as we're talking about off air, to make sure that you create those neural links and you then get that memory to stay with you.
Absolutely. I think the good little reminder too is like you're not just learning it for an exam, like you do need to know it for the job is a good little reminder as well.
Yeah, and like the most difficult thing really, especially when it comes to anything medical, is that transition from academia to practice. So the more that you can you know now and you can reproduce at a at short notice on a whim, whether that's someone asking you, you visualizing it, seeing a patient with that condition or that sign or symptom, that's what's going to like propel you to be like a masterful clinician, you know, because that's where you're going to then grow exponentially once you start, treating patients or assessing patients.
And so you mentioned that rereading is not useful and that you were going to touch on active recall. So do you want to go into a bit about that as well?
Yeah, sure. So like I was saying off air, you know, my first year was definitely highlighting every single word in the textbook and lecture page. And you just start to realize that you are just wasting your time by not really understanding like what you're actually looking for. You know, it's like, okay, well, now I just have to learn everything. And unfortunately, that just doesn't help you in the exam or in any clinical context either. So please don't passively just sort of study like in a sense where you're just reading something and then rereading it again and thinking that's going to form memory. That will do something, but it's not going to maximize your time. And, you know, I'd rather see everyone out enjoying themselves and taking care of their well-being rather than just strapped to a desk trying to reread content. So if you're not engaged, you're not going to actually get the information down. And that's the biggest point I can put across, period. So what I think when it comes to gaining, you know, mastery of knowledge, and it takes purpose, persistence, and consistency, and also a bit of passion as well. You gotta like what you're doing. You know, even if you think, oh, you know, I'm not really into obstetrics, you're like, yeah, but what you're learning could also save someone's life as well. And that's really important. I think everyone can be passionate about saving someone's life, hopefully, if you're doing this course, right?
I hope so.
So now we enter that realm of active recall. So like you were saying before, creating like a flashcard system or something like that. Now, I use Anki because it's really easy to use. I can build my own cards. And like you were saying, when I click on a question and I tell it to show me the answer after I've actively brought that answer out of my head and I've talked out loud, so I know what I'm talking about, hopefully, I'll assess how long it took me to get my answer, if I actually got it all right, and when do I need to be retested. And it's got those functions in there to be, you know, retested in a minute, retested in a day, retested in 3 months, and it'll send me a notification to do that, which is great. Another way to actually maximize this, though, is to make sure that your practice questions in some ways, I know in first year you probably won't have a lot of PBL stuff, but making sure that you have practice-based problems, because that's what's going to like promote you to actually start thinking about conditions and why it is that condition, not something else. There's the Feynman technique as well. Where you sort of write down everything you know. Now, that can be, you can illustrate this, you can make a mind map, and you just literally word, like brain dump onto a page everything you know about a topic, and then go back to your surmise notes and fill in those gaps and be really honest with yourself, like change the pen color so you know where you sort of like what you're missing, and try and understand why you're missing it as well. But this is another way, like we were saying before, those students who, in those studies where they gave them, you know, I think it was a paragraph or some numbers or something like that. And one group was like, okay, you just keep studying the numbers and then we'll test you. So that every day they just read the numbers. And then you had the other ones who just saw the numbers once and they just started like trying to remember it and put it on a page without reading them again. And those ones who had just saw it once and practicing with it, they're the ones who actually got the higher marks. So do what you can to get everything out of your mind. Another really, my favorite way actually is getting an Excel spreadsheet, because I can make notes whilst I'm synthesizing my own study notes. And in one column, I'll have like a question. So, you know, what is it? What's a myocardial infarction? And then in the other column, which will be hidden, I'll have to, you know, bring that up. I can either write it down while it's in front of me, but then I can open that box up and go, okay, cool. So it is an occlusion of coronary artery causing ischemia due to, you know, an oxygen deficiency from blood flow. And then I can go, okay, did I actually write all that down correctly? You know, and then I've got something measurable, and I can then retest myself over and over and over again. Okay. The last thing I would say is talk out loud. So there's two ways I sort of like to do this. Either you can just sit there and just talk to yourself like a crazy person, because people love that, or you can get in front of a whiteboard and you can perform it like a lecture, you know, and like people are asking you questions and think, what could they ask me and would I be able to answer it, and try and put that up on a board. So all of this is actually practicing with the information in real time, which is very similar to what we do when we are in front of patients. To play devil's advocate a little bit though, it is okay for that foundation just to be memory, because you will start to make new connections as you grapple with it and as you start to study more, and things will highlight to you, and that will, you know, that will increase your knowledge as well. But you know, just don't ever get discouraged if things are becoming difficult. Like, difficult is such a good thing. You know, it means you're challenging your mind. It also means that you're getting yourself ready for an examination. So when you walk into that exam, the anxiety goes away, because as soon as you start reading those questions, you realize, oh, I've been doing this for like the last 2 months. You smash that exam, you walk out, you high five yourself, and everyone's like, why don't they just high five themselves? And like, because you know you just absolutely killed it. And like, that is a very good feeling to have at the end of it. You know, if you, the work will pay off.
Absolutely. I love that one. So this does take a bit of time. You know, students generally have a lot of things going on, but they do worry about, and another main question is always time management. We've given them all these, you know, study techniques and things like that. And you've mentioned things like spaced repetition that do need you to be diligent with your time. How do people be diligent with their time? How do they time manage?
I think, so at the start of every semester, okay, set a goal-orientated timeline that you know can be achievable. Now, everyone's got a different life. Some people have kids. Some people have to work full-time. Some people are caring for their parents, grandparents, you name it, okay? So you need to sort of see where you can spend the most of your time studying, because this is the most important time for you right now as well. But in a structured way where you know on that day you're sitting down to do X, Y, and Z, so you can create those habits, because those habits will turn into the most powerful attitude, work ethic you will actually ever get, okay? So if it's there and it just says, even if it's only you're sitting down for 20 minutes, you know, and that's, this is day one, great. Do it. As long as you can sit down for 20 minutes and do it, just do it, because the next time maybe you'll sit down for a little bit longer, because that habit will start to create. But make sure it, you've written it out in whatever fashion. Maybe you draw it out like we're talking about, but it's set out in an achievable timeline. I think some of the easiest ways to do this is to break it up into small little bits, like chunking. Okay, have you heard of that before?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, cool. So, you know, no one, if anyone gives me a mobile number, I don't try to remember, you know, the whole thing. I'll put it into, you know, blocks of three. And I know that I can remember that a lot easier, okay? Because I'm not trying to remember 10 numbers or, nine numbers. I'm just trying to remember three numbers. Even though they might be a bit larger, but so look at how that subject can be broken down and then put it together. So like, you know, again, we'll keep going back to the heart for some reason. But if you're looking at the physiology of the heart, you know, okay, break it down from what are the myocytes like? How do they break down? You know, what's the innervation to it, right? And then, you know, what's its holistic structure? And how does that work? So you've got these small pieces rather than trying to mush it all together, because once you break it down, those connections will actually sprout in your mind and it'll all just become one. And you'll be like, oh, how did that happen? It's almost like magic. but also make sure you do things under a time constraint, okay? Because a lot of people get this thing where, like, I'm going to study for 2 hours. And you're like, okay, cool. I can't sit still for 2 hours. So I don't know how that works for you. but you can do things like employing the Pomodoro method, right? Where you put your phone away. So you put all your distractions away, but you set a timer on your phone for 25 minutes and you hammer for as much as you can for 25 minutes. And as soon as that alarm goes off, you move away. Give yourself a 5 to 7 minute break and then you go again. And again, that will create those positive habits to like stay in and be engaged with the information, because at the back end of your mind, you know that you have to get up and leave after that. So hopefully that will be another way that you can really engage with the information and move through it. Look, I think you really need to get a very good understanding about your own well-being when it comes to study as well. Everyone's got a maximal threshold that they can achieve, and you know, some can do more, some can do less, and that's okay. It just has to be what you get the most bang for buck for. So as soon as you ever find yourself, you know, mentally wandering off or becoming distracted, you know, just take a break. All right. The most important thing is creating the habit of sitting down and studying. Because once again, oh God, this is the fifth time I've said this, the more you create, you sit down and create that habit, the easier it will become, because it will just become second nature. But, you know, ask yourself, you know, how long can I really go for? And just time it. And if you can find that, you know, oh, I can actually sit down for 50 minutes and then I'm, you know, I'm mush, sure, that's fine. But, you know, if it's 2 hours or something like that, you know, maybe take a 20-minute break after 2 hours. Just don't sit there for like 4 hours just going, I have to be here for 4 hours, because if I'm not, then I haven't got my study done. You haven't done any study. You've just sat there for 4 hours. So make sure you're engaged at all times. And that's, like, for me, that's how I think you should be utilizing your time the most.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And going from actually understanding what type of learner you are and knowing that it could be a combination of things, and that takes experimenting. Like, you know, it's fine to do something in 1 year and or for one semester and then change it. And then going from how we create the notes, so actually showing up to your lectures or your tutes, eliminating those distractions, you know, making sure that you actively engage with the content rather than just passively sit there and do all of that, and actually having a proper method to writing out your notes. And then understanding how you do things differently for fact heavy and concept heavy type of things. And then going into what we talked about with space, repetition, and active recall. And then our last sort of one, utilizing your time. So all of that, putting all of that together, what are your key takeaways from that?
Yeah, that's a really good summary. Definitely get to those lectures, engage with the topic, use it as like a almost like a detective like strategy, where you're trying to pull the best information from the lecturer, not just everything they're saying. You know, once you have synthesized those notes, condense them down so you can practice and have practice questions and review those materials and start using that active recall methods. That there's heaps of stuff on the internet if you just type in active recall. But use ways to, you know, schedule and specific times, and, you know, that are spaced apart, like we're talking about, and review and test. Constantly review and test. Make sure it's a measurable thing that you can go back and be honest with yourself and say, did I get this or did I not get it? If it starts to become easy, you need to start making it harder. If you get comfortable, that's a bad thing. If it feels difficult, fantastic. You're in the right space. And then just make sure that you use those time constraints with your study so that you can stay engaged at all times. You know what? The last thing I'm actually going to talk about is hardware and how you do things. Okay. So I don't know what you do. I've always written handwritten my notes.
Yeah, the same.
In classes. You've never typed?
I tried in first year and it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. So this is a bit of a dual bag. Okay. There's conflicting studies on both sides. And basically, again, it comes down to how engaged you are. So if you can sit there and type and you can engage with the information and you can get things down, that's great. But understand that you can't be just typing everything the lecturer says or the tutor says or what's on the page. Right? You need to be grappling with it. Some say that if you're handwriting your notes, then you're doing a better service to yourself, because there's more of a connection neurally, I think it is, and it actually helps to make memory whilst you're doing it as well. Go figure. But again, it's whatever works for you. Are you not using an iPad then?
Or
a tablet, sorry. We're not sponsored by Apple.
I'd love to be. I do have an iPad, and I did utilize it like with the Apple Pencil and started handwriting my notes on that. I did like it for some time, because you could do drawings, you could grab pictures off the internet and then annotate that. But over time, I've literally just keep going back to pen and paper. It just keeps drawing me back for some reason.
Yeah, right. I'm an iPad fiend. I use some of the writing apps like, you know, GoodNotes and Notability, and you can be super creative and it's fantastic. Not to say that, you know, the other devices don't do just as well, because they do these days. But you have to, again, you have to find out what works for you. I like it because I can have everything in one place. That being my books, my notes, my schematics, my flashcards, and then I can, you know, you've got the web there as well. So I like that modular setup. So just find out what actually works for you. You know, don't think that just because you're going to buy a new computer, you're going to study more. You're going to study more if you get down and actually study more. Okay. It's a nice little trap that we all like to be in, I think.
Absolutely.
The shiny new things.
I love to, before when you were saying engaging with the content and the lectures and your tutes and things like that, but it ties back really nicely to an episode we did with you guys, which released at the start of the year, when you guys say that the thing you love in students on placement is them always breaking down and asking questions, like asking heaps of questions. So I thought that was a really nice tie between you can start doing that in your lectures and your tutes, and it can, if you start practicing it, then it'll tie nicely into placement as well.
Absolutely, because that's you're going to get a lot of rich learning if you can actually put those together. My last thought is actually how you study in groups. So I'm going to put this to yourself first, just because I'm curious. But how do you study in groups, and how many people do you normally study with?
I don't generally, but when I have, I've generally been in a group maybe 3 to 4 people, and it went from, because I never liked just sitting there and studying by myself or just talking, because we'd end up just talking. But in the end, it was more about testing each other. And then if someone didn't know something, someone would teach it to them. And it became a lot more valuable.
Yeah. So that's exactly the point I wanted to hit on, really. Make sure that your groups are small. So I would say 4 plus yourself in a, like 4 in total, so you and 3 others, is probably the maximum threshold you want. You and 2 others, probably the happy medium, right? Because, you know, if it's just you and someone else, you're just going to start talking. And if the group is too big, then there's going to be a loss of connection. But then what you get to do in those small groups is that you can bring up a topic, you can sort of teach it to someone else, or you can sort of go, okay, I'm going to, you know, Alex is going to take on, you know, axis and the different types of what it means to have left axis deviation versus right axis deviation. And you're going to teach that. And if you miss anything, then someone can say, oh, hey, I also thought about this. And then everyone gets to use that active recall in an in-time sense as well. So it can be very rich if it's there's a dedicated time and topics that you're going to use. But if you're just going there without a plan, then, you know, that's that point where you get distracted really easy, and you know, you can get lost. And it only takes one person to sort of start picking up their phone and messaging someone else, and then the whole group will just get thrown into that lot as well. So just be careful that the people that you choose to study with, or just set a precedent to say, hey, when we walk into this room, whether it's, you know, in a library or whatever, phones go in the bag. This is purely an hour of just us mixing information so we can become better.
Absolutely. That's a really good one. Another important point as well is a lot of people are going to the uni for their first time, and it can be quite a daunting experience at first. How important is actually participating and engaging and just not being afraid to put up your hand, ask a question, or to answer a question when it's thrown at you?
Yeah. So I can completely appreciate that anxiety of looking silly in front of people, or feeling like, you know, you're not smart enough to, you know, get through this content. I would much rather ask a stupid question or say the wrong thing and use that as a learning experience. So when I'm in front of a patient, I don't get it wrong. Okay. Because this is the time for you to just get out everything. So you can actually progress and get better. Right. So not at all, just ask whatever you need to think. If you've got the wrong answer, just throw it out, because then you get corrected and you can have that, you can go on with that, because then if you hold on to that wrong answer the whole time, then you're fooling yourself, for one, and then you're not going to progress. And I think we've talked about this probably before, that the difference between that growth mindset and that fixed mindset. So if you're afraid to engage because you don't want to look that you're not smart enough, you're going to create a fixed mindset. You're going to start to shy away. You're not going to participate, and you're going to plateau, and you'll probably just barely scrape through. Whereas if you've got that growth mindset and you're not afraid to get it wrong, but then do better and then get it right, or maybe you only get it 70% right next time, and then it's 90%, and then it's 100%. That's where you're going to develop into a fantastic clinician and an excellent paramedic, because you've actually made the mistakes in the classroom where it's safe, rather than out in the real world where it could be potentially very dangerous.
That's really good. Thank you for that. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to have a chat about all these study tips. Is there anything else you'd love to add?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty happy. Hopefully everyone finds something useful within that. And, maybe I'm just expecting a higher degree of student now after this. Not really. Most of the students these days are fantastic. They blow us away from, you can definitely tell the evolution of what the course is and like the type of people who are really starting to go into this field. And you guys are the future, which is fantastic, because I got to say, like, even some of my students just scare me when I'm like, oh, I was definitely not as brilliant as some of you people, but I'm not going to tell you how brilliant you are. I'm just going to say, keep working harder, because that's where the money is.
That's funny. Thank you so much. So I'll pop in down below in the show notes breakdown of what we discussed. I'll pop in a couple of the templates of things we were talking about. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.